Hi everyone, this is Ross. I'm back for part two of the episode on the Enneagram, and today we're going to cover the remaining six Enneagram types that I haven't covered yet, the remaining six of nine. I'm going to talk about my own personality type. I'm going to talk about specifically as well the personality types of two people very close to me, and I'm going to share sort of the insights I've had into these types and how they conflict with my type, and you know how learning the Enneagram has helped me understand them better. We're also going to talk about a few other nuances of the model, and we're finally going to end with how to use this model to grow, to understand yourself better, to understand other people better, to understand the world better. In other words, how do you use the Enneagram, not as just this theoretical system or structure, but actually as a practical thing to help you grow and change as a person. This is a Deep Psychology Podcast. I'm Ross Edwards, author, coach, podcaster, and avid practitioner and teacher of psychology and spirituality. In listening to this podcast, you're part of the worldwide Deep Psychology community of tens of thousands of people undertaking profound personal transformation. You can find me on Spotify and Apple, where I release new episodes every Thursday. If you dig what I do and want to help the show grow, share this with a friend and leave a review. You can also go deeper with this work by training with me at deep-psychology.com. Let's get started. So just before we get going with that, I'd like to mention a thing I'm doing in July called the Sunday Sit. Now, I'm a meditation practitioner, meditator. I've been meditating for nearly 10 years regularly. I also teach it online and in person, and I've worked with many people. I've worked with universities and I've done courses on it. I've done a lot of episodes on it. I've written lots of articles on it. And basically what the Sunday Sit is about, I'm going to post a new meditation audio every Sunday, and I'm going to encourage you to listen to the episode at that time and follow along with me and actually do the meditation. It's going to be at 8 o'clock Central European time, 7 o'clock UK time, which is 2 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time on Sundays in July, starting this Sunday. And I'm really excited. I just want to kind of, for those of you who have never tried meditation or have never come across how I teach meditation, I would like you to get a taste of that and get a taste of what I offer in my virtual classes. So let's get going with the Enneagram overview again. Now, we covered the first three personality types, which fall into the gut triad. This week, we're going to start with the heart triad. This is types 2, 3, and 4. And the heart triad, we can think of it as sort of fiery types. They're quite fiery, heart-centered. These three types tend to have high emotional intelligence. They see feelings as the main way to connect and empathize with people. They tend to desire love and acceptance and validation. They base their decision on emotion. They manage human relationships using their emotions. And what you'll find about these types is they tend to be quite forgiving and compassionate overall. So let's go into type 2 then. Type 2 is called the giver. The giver is like this loving people person. It's caring, it's sociable, it's helpful, it's attentive. It tends to seek closeness with other people. It wants to be compassionate and empathetic. It gives, it's what's called the giver, it's generous. It can be quite motherly. It always has good intentions, it's well-meaning, it really wants to get on with other people, and that's sort of its main way of interacting with other people. The main fear of the giver is being unlovable, and its main desire is to be loved. And it's funny because someone who's very close to me, I'm pretty sure they are a type 2 predominantly, they've not done the test as far as I know. And I don't think they actually like the Enneagram too much as a system, but there we go. And I really noticed the two in them. It's like everyone thinks they are a nice person, like a good, fundamentally good person. This person tends to get along with everyone. They tend to be very generous. They don't tend to hoard things for themselves. Everything they have is an opportunity to also share that and give that to other people. And so those are the really positive sides of the type two, is that it really kind of sees beyond the differences in people. It tries to see the good in people, and then that forms the basis for how it reacts and how it lives life. What I'd say about the two, though, is sometimes, you know, all types are positive and negative. They cannot possibly work on their own. What I'd say about the type two is that, in my experience, from having someone close to me who's quite a strong two, I think, is that people who are not twos, they often, their first impulse isn't to just get along with someone and to be empathetic and to be giving. They're sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes they're more sort of skeptical, reserved. They're sort of they don't want to open up too much, and even they can be conflictive. What I find with the two is that they struggle to understand people who aren't twos, and they actually demonize people who don't, whose immediate orientation isn't to be sympathetic and generous and all the rest of it. And it's actually quite a big contradiction in terms, like an unresolvable contradiction within the two. And this is where I think the desire to sort of be loved when it's applied to all situations, it can sort of eat itself alive, because it cannot understand the opposite, and it doesn't know how to deal with it, and it can become quite unloving in its desire for everyone to sort of love and express love. So let's move on to the type three. Type three is called the performer. The performer is an ambitious achiever. It's energetic, adaptive, driven. It's quite flashy. It likes to perfect itself and everything it does, its projects. It wants to have an impressive image. It likes to be charming. It's status conscious. It's quite competitive. It wants to be number one. Basically, the type three fears unimportance, and it desires to be valuable and recognized. This type flourishes nowadays because of capitalism, because of individual enterprise, because of sort of class mobility and all the rest of it, and the fact that we've got everything available to us now in all corners of the globe, more or less. I mean, that's not entirely true, but more or less. This type really flourishes at this particular moment in history. And you might look out on the world and you might think everyone is a type three after reading this description. Be careful. If you're seeing it everywhere, it's probably not everywhere. Even though it's true, it will flourish. I think we all have a bit of type three in us just because of the way society is structured. If you don't have some type three in you, you know, if you have no drive to success, if you have no drive to kind of do good work, and you have no drive to kind of create success for yourself, it's going to be hard for you to live a full life nowadays. That's just a harsh reality of the social context we're in. So yeah, just an interesting comment there. But have a look for type threes in your life, pure type threes. I'm sure you'll find one or two or many. I can certainly think of a few. Type four is the romantic. This is a passionate individualist. They're imaginative, sensitive, creative. They are emotional, deep. They are quite romantic and idealistic. They have an ideal world, and they kind of compare everything to that world. They can be quite reserved, self-conscious, and vulnerable. They fear insignificance and they desire uniqueness. And I can certainly think of person I'm close to that is a pretty strong type four, I think, and I can sort of feel it. They're an artistic person. They're quite quirky. They are quite unusual. They dress differently. They have haircuts, different haircuts all the time.
They don't conform to their gender stereotypes, and they have this, this sort of detached, romantic sort of creative quality. I can feel the foreignness in them. It's quite an interesting thing. Have a look for that in the people that you're close to. Let's move on now to the head triad. This is types 5, 6, and 7. The head triad basically thinks that the way to make decisions is through logic and through reasoning and through cold analysis rather than through emotion and through gut decision. They tend to sort of seek knowledge, they plan things out, they like to have everything in control in their mind before they do anything. And interestingly, I identify as a type 5. I've done tests that say I'm a type 5, and I read the description of a type 5 and I'm like, that is me. So, and I can see when I read characteristics of the head triad, I can see that that is me as well. Let's talk about the type 5. The type 5 is the observer. They are a seeker of knowledge. They are curious, insightful. They are strong at logic. They are focused. Their motto is that I have to know. They observe rather than participate. They're happy to be alone. They're quite introverted and isolated. They like to find patterns in things. They can be very insightful and they seek deep understanding. So look at the name of this podcast. It's called Deep Psychology. They fear incompetence and they desire competence. So let me talk about being a five from within. As I said, I'm pretty sure I'm quite a strong type five. I mean, looking back in my life, I can see that I've always sought knowledge. I've always loved learning things, whether it's, and it really doesn't matter where. For example, when I was younger, I used to like look at maps and I used to learn the flags and I used to sort of learn the location of the different countries. I remember I even had a jigsaw puzzle of a map of the globe, and I used to sit and do it over and over again. And I was just fascinated by all these different names and all these different weird places with their different customs. And when I was in my early teens, I fell in love with mathematics and science, and I just found it absolutely fascinating. It's probably one of the reasons I excelled at school, because I really was just interested. Often I pursued this knowledge in secret. Now it's kind of out in the open. Everyone knows that I study Chinese. I can speak Spanish almost like a native. I sit and read books. That's like one of my main hobbies. I'm always studying. I'm always asking questions. I'm always reading. I'm always just, I just want to understand things. I've always excelled with logical abstract subjects. Languages isn't such an abstract thing, I suppose, but maths and science, definitely abstract. And struggled more with practical subjects. I mean, I'm a pretty good cook, but when it comes to when I remember in school when I used to do woodworking, sometimes I would have to practice things over and over again to get it because I really wanted to use my mind. I really wanted to use maths to figure out. I really wanted to use like some sort of theory, whereas actually with working with wood, for example, though it helps to plan it out and to have like a clear thing, ultimately it's a physical activity. And I can see that looking back, that was something I struggled with at school. It took me ages to learn how to drive, for example. I love learning and learning deeply. Just one of my main things in life is just learning. For no real reason other than just because I'm fascinated. Obviously, my career now in this podcast and my classes and all the rest of it, my coaching is very much learning based and I'm continually upgrading my knowledge, but it's always been there. I like reading huge books. If I see a book and it's not over 300, 400, 500 pages, I will not buy it because I just do not like the flimsiness. And I'm actually writing a book right now at the moment. And it's going to be about 60,000, 70,000 words, which in the days of TikTok might seem quite quaint and irrelevant. But listen, I want a full understanding and I like to transmit a full understanding. I have a certain tendency to isolate myself. I'm very comfortable in my own company. I only have a few close friends, but I do think that the people I'm close to, I really am very close to. I like teaching. It's one of the main things I do, one of the main sources of income I have and I have always had. Because and fundamentally, what I like doing in my teaching, I like to people to understand things as deeply as I believe that I do. And so I carefully explain things. I try not to oversimplify things. And this might come across in my podcast episodes. If you're wondering why, well, I'm a type five, folks. What can I say? There's obviously downside to all this. I'm not saying this to sort of boast about being a five or to say that you should be a five or to claim that it's the best. I can obviously see the downsides. For one thing, I never quite feel intellectually satisfied because if you read one theory, there's always another theory that either contradicts it or backs it up or explains it. I'm always like, I've got this huge list of topics I want to study that I will never get through in a lifetime. As a teacher, as a coach, I sometimes feel like I've never explained things deeply enough. Even in this episode, I feel like I've not quite hit the nail on the head. Whereas you as a listener might be sitting on the other end thinking, well, I feel like I've understood what you're saying. I can be too intellectual, like really like too conceptual. I think that meditation and spiritual work has brought me more down into my skin and into my body, into my mind, into my actual experience of being alive, rather than just in the mental realm all the time. I can be quite disconnected from earthly concerns, you know, too intellectual, too wanting to theorize all the time, not just like down to earth. What are the actual needs that I have moment to moment as a human being, and how am I satisfying them? I've noticed I've always had a certain phobia to people and socializing, and it's often not a conscious thing. It actually sits like at the very heart of my emotional world. You know, if I know I'm going to be socializing, I feel a resistance to it. And I can close up and I can go into my intellectual world and I can just be sitting there thinking while other people are enjoying themselves. And sort of overly obsessive, basically, with knowledge, with trying to know too much, with trying to be too perfect with my concepts and my knowledge and all the rest of it. So I hope that's given you a good insight into five from the inside. And listen, for me, learning that I'm a five has been a big source of relief because some of the things, it explains my difficulties, it explains why I excel in what I excel in. It explains why I'm interested in the things I'm interested in. And it just helps me say, well, how can I use my personality type as an advantage, and how can I try and sort of sidestep the disadvantages? Type six is the loyalist. This is a seeker of safety and security. They are cooperative, they're trustworthy, they are a leader, they take care of the group, they're committed. They can also be anxious and suspicious. They are reliable, hardworking, they can be defensive and evasive. They fear a lack of support and guidance, and they desire security. You might know a few sixes, and you might even realize that you step into being a six. One thing about sixes is it's quite easy to you know, if you see a leader, you can say, oh, they're a six. That's oversimplifying things a lot, I think. And you might look at a parent, and they might say, well, they're in charge, they're the head of the group, they're the leader. Yeah, I think that's a big mistake to make. These things are beyond just the roles that people adopt in life. Obviously, there is a correlation, but that can be very misleading. Type seven. Finally, we're going to come to the type seven. I'm actually going to talk about someone else who is very close to me, who is a type seven. They're called the enthusiast. They're a pleasure seeker. They are spontaneous. They're lively. They're optimistic. They're energetic, they're extroverted, they love life, they seek variety and novelty, they're high-spirited, impulsive. These people are the life of the party. They desire happiness and they feel pain. So let me be very specific. The person that I'm very close to who is a type 7 is my mum. And I think no one really should know who my mum is. So I can say that. And listen, as a type 5, man, I find my mum honestly too much sometimes. And I notice that I make a judgment about type 7s because my mum isn't the only type 7 I know. I often just think they're scattered and they're superficial and they're never content. You know, here I am as a type 5. I like reading my books. I like going deep into things. I like explaining things. I like having deep conversations. I like analyzing the hell out of everything. And here's a type 7 running around, looking for the next song to play, looking for the next activity to do, looking for the next tasty meal. You know, it's just exhausting sometimes. It's just, I almost think that type fives and sevens can be almost the polar opposite in a certain way. And sometimes I have struggled with my mum's type sevenness, and it's driven us apart sometimes. And it's caused both of us a lot of grief. Especially now that I don't live in the same country as my mum and dad. And when they come to visit, you know, they are very high spirited anyway. But when you add that, you know, the holiday mode to my mum being a type 7, it's just, wow, it's a challenge for me. And listen, learning about the Enneagram and learning to realize that my mum is a type 7, it's not just my mum being my mum and trying to annoy me, it's that this is our personality type. It's like my heart expands a bit, and it's like I have more compassion, I have more sympathy, and I realize she's not choosing to be what I see as over energetic and scattered and all the rest of it. And maybe I'm wrong in thinking that it's a bad thing. I can see the downsides. Maybe I'm not seeing the upsides to it, and maybe as a type five, I'm just too. I just need to chill out, and I need to like get in touch with the fun side and with my child, the inner child, and you know, the part of me that just wants to go crazy and all of that stuff. So this has been a journey for me, learning about these types, and it's been just a lesson in seeing people as they are and not having to judge them and trying to fit around them and trying to see what they have that I don't. So we've covered the nine types. There's actually more types, in a sense, that are blends of these types. And these are called the wing types. Now, let me just give a bit of background. Basically, if you investigate people and you categorize them into these different types, what you'll find is that they fall into more than one. That is normal. What you'll also find more often than not is that if they fall into multiple types, they fall into types that are adjacent to their dominant type. So if you have a type 7, for example, it's quite likely they'll exhibit traits from 8 and 6. And basically, they have found that a significant number of people have this to the extent that we can say that they are not just one, they're actually what we call a wing type. So basically, all types have two wing types. You have a 7 wing 8, you have a 7 wing 6. In my case, you have a 5 wing 6 and a 5 wing 4. So the wing types are just the types made up of the dominant type along with the wing type. So if you do two wing types for each of the 9 Enneagram types, you get 18 wing types. So I've actually written on articles on all the wing types if you want to check them out. And basically, it's just a blend of the two. It's just a blend. Like if you're a 5 wing 6, for example, you're predominantly a 5, but you've got a lot of 6 in you, and you're basically just a blend of the two. And I can see that in people that I'm close to, that they exhibit the wing types quite strongly. I'm not sure enough to say that they are a wing type per se, but I can see that they embody the adjacent types. All right, so let's finish this podcast, this episode, by talk. No, we're not finishing the entire podcast. We're finishing the episode. I hope you're glad to hear that. Let's finish this episode just by summarizing how you can use the Enneagram as a psychospiritual tool. Basically what it says is that we want to embody our type, we want to transcend our type, and we want to refine our type. And let's go through some pointers for doing that. First of all, I think you've got to really know what your personality type is. So go online, do a quick search, personality type test. I don't have one, but if you do a search on the internet, you can find them quite quickly. It doesn't take long, 5 or 10 minutes. Answer a few questions as honestly as you can, and you'll get your dominant type. In listening to this podcast, you're probably getting, you know, quite a good idea of what your type is anyway. And once you've done that, I want you to sort of watch you living out your type. Rather than just living it, watch yourself living it and try to see, you know, what are the upsides of it? What are the downsides of it? Where am I really sort of over-identified with my type? Try to refrain from questionable type-driven behavior when it happens. By watching yourself, you'll see these traits rather than being them, and then it gives you an option of whether you want to engage in the ones that aren't so productive for you. And a good way to do this is to take what is called the sacred pause, and this isn't an Enneagram thing, this is a mindful self-awareness thing. The sacred pause is basically before we say something, before we do something, before we are driven to act in some way, we pause for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, just to give us a bit of space from it. And then once we are in sort of observation mode, once we're able to see the thing that we're about to do as a thought or an emotion in us that is driving us to do that, we can then, we're in a position to decide now. And we're in a position to allow a wiser part of ourselves to come forth. And basically, as you do this, you're starting to not just de-addict yourself from your type, which you might find is very positive, but you will start to de-addict yourself from personality as a whole, from being attached to your personality. You will create a gap between external stimulus and internal response, which will make those internal responses, the habitual ones, less habitual, and it gives you much more freedom of choice. And you're in a new personality at that point. And the more you practice this, the more you are reprogramming your habits. So, yeah, we want to know what our type is by taking a test and just by analysing these and thinking back and thinking about our lives. And we want to watch ourselves living it out. And we want to sort of refrain from our dysfunctional type behaviour and try to sort of go into a wiser space where we can decide before we engage in it. And that will ultimately start to loosen this type a little bit, because our type, it has its flaws, it has its very rich side, it has its very positive side, and I think we should try to use that to our advantage, but also it has its negative side. And it basically traps us in a false sense of self, because, as I've spoken about before, our mind is not who we really are. Our personality is not who we really are. And our type is one of the main ways, as Russ Hudson and Don Russell say, the founders of the Enneagram system, say that the Enneagram is basically, our Enneagram type is one of the main ways that our identity is trapped in our sense of who we are. So to end on that profound note, thanks a lot for listening to this episode on the Enneagram. I really hope to see you on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central European time, 7 p.m. UK time for our first Sunday sit. I hope to see you all there. The numbers are growing every week, every day with this podcast, and I'm really excited to just keep bringing out deep psychology, episodes on deep psychology, on psychospirituality to help you grow in psyche and in spirit. And stay tuned, I've got new episodes coming Thursday, I've got the Sunday sit in July, I've got reposts this month on Tuesday, just to kind of bring back my old episodes. Cool. And of course, train with me. If you want to go deeper with my classes and one-to-one coaching, head to the homepage of my site, deep-psychology.com, for more information, or please contact me to ask what this is about. I would love to work with you. Thanks a lot and take care. See you soon.
Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, please leave a review and share with a friend. And if you'd like to go deeper, head to deep-psychology.com to join my training. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you soon.